This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Morning show, Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Opening day of baseball, and in our 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to former Pirates pitcher, part of the broadcast team now, Matt Capps. And I'm sure he has some opening day experiences that he'd like to share. I have one I want to share with you, Paul.
Okay.
10 years ago, actually 2014, in the opener, Neil Walker hit a walk-off winner and beat the Cubs 1-0. At the time, my father was going through chemotherapy, and I was in the room with him at the hospital while they were doing this, and there were a number of people in there doing the same thing. And the nursing staff was out just outside the door, you know, around this circular station, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they had the Pirates game on the screens, but no audio. So Neil Walker, I've known Neil's family for years. His father, the late Tom Walker, who was also a major leaguer, and his wife, Carolyn, great people. And so knew Neil since he was a kid. So my dad was, you know, sitting there with that pick in his arm, getting the chemo, right? And I just started doing the play-by-play by watching the screen. And everybody in there was kind of getting a kick out of it, right? And turns out Neil hits a home run walk-off.
That's so cool.
Home opener. And you could hear the nurses cheering out in the hallway there. You know, it's just something that crossed my mind this morning. I'm like, wow. And I haven't thought about that since. And I thought, you know, that's kind of what baseball does. Take your mind off, you know, the gravity of what we were doing in the moment. And everybody was kind of cheering for Neil and the Pirates just for the opening day. It was kind of a moment.
People at Sportsnet put out a little blurb yesterday that came into our inbox in the newsroom about their broadcast lineup. It sounds pretty much unchanged. Greg Brown and Joe Block doing the play-by-play. The color analysts will be Bob Walk, John Wehner, as you said, Matt Capps, Kevin Young, Neil Walker, right?
Yeah.
And I think Neil in that lineup, by the way, I think Neil's the best of the bunch. I enjoy listening to him a lot. Hannah Mears is the sideline reporter, so that's for the game itself. Then the studio team, Rob King, will be hosting the majority of them. And then the former Pirates, you got McHenry, Fort McHenry, Stephen Brault, Jordy Mercer, Alex Presley, Kevin Young, and Matt Capps again.
Boy, that's a expansive.
They have a lot of people
team
working. And then they've got more sideline and hosting done by Dan Potash and Haley Hunter. And Dan Potash, by the way, boy, do I like watching him do hockey games. Those interviews between the periods with the Penguins, they're terrific.
I'm glad you brought that up, because if you want to see the expansive video coverage, They're offering a deal, Sportsnet Pittsburgh, the streaming deal.
So in other words, instead of buying it on a month-by-month basis, now people can buy a six-month block, right?
Yes. So if you're a baseball-only fan, for instance, you can just buy the season, basically, and vice versa for the Penguin and Penguin games.
They're calling it the season pass option, Larry, and the price on it got my attention yesterday. It's $99.99 for 6 months?
That's just actually...
I mean, that sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, think about how much it costs to go to a game.
Right. When you do the math, say you were going, just say a family of four, you know, by the time you... And baseball tickets are much more reasonable because there's so many more games, right? And then you would pay for parking and whatever treats you're going to get at the ballpark, it adds up. So if you're really a big fan and want to not miss a minute, that seems like a reasonable price option.
So what's your gut tell you about what's ahead this year? I think it's gooder starting out with Miami because the Marlins were not a very good team last year.
The gut is, and you hear everybody talk about it, they want ownership.
I mean, you were down there, Larry. You should know.
They want ownership to spend more money on players. Okay, let's get that out on the table. Second, we have one of the best pitchers in baseball and exciting with Paul Skeens, who opens today, as you mentioned. What we don't know is, will this team be able to hit with some of the new acquisitions, some of the players? And if they can, they will win more games than they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly disappointing because they had back-to-back years where they won 76 games and lost 86.
Mm.
If somehow they can find a way to flip that, it would be postseason. And this town will go out of its mind again like they did back in, you know, those...
Like 2013 was one heck of a year.
Three seasons in a row.
There were 3 years there where, yeah, it just changed the culture of the city when they were playing well like that.
And it was fun. But it's nice that get the season underway. And again, Matt Capps will join us in our 9 o'clock hour to talk about his memories of opening day. I can tell you this, for the players... Doesn't matter how big a star they are, opening days are always magic, and they love it. They love it in the home opener, especially, which will be a week from tomorrow against the New York Yankees.
Mm.
Hey, there's a story out of Florida I wanted to share with you, because this will open up a lot of questions with people being deported who were doing what others would consider menial jobs. They're having a hard time filling many of those jobs, and now they're changing the laws in Florida to allow younger and younger teens to take some of those jobs. Check out this from CBS's Manuel Bohorquez.
Florida's crackdown on hiring undocumented workers started 2 years ago, a law signed into effect by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who last week acknowledged a tightening workforce.
Why do we say we need to import foreigners, even import them illegally, when, you know, teenagers used to work at these resorts?
A Florida Senate bill would remove restrictions on 16 and 17-year-olds, allowing for overnight shifts. Shifts longer than 8 hours during school days, more than 30 hours during school weeks, and remove mandated meal breaks. It would also lift those restrictions on 14 and 15-year-olds who are homeschooled or attend virtual classes.
This is a parental rights issue, and frankly, we're not talking The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. We're talking about them working at Publix, at Piggly Wiggly.
This comes as Florida has about 77 available workers for every 100 open jobs, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But at Paradise Farms in Homestead, farm manager Brendan Sutton does not believe easing restrictions on child labor is the answer.
That's what this bill is designed for. To take advantage of poor people for the benefit of rich people.
Do you see a world where a parent who's undocumented doesn't feel that they can freely go out to work, may want to send their child to do it instead?
Yeah, I mean, you're getting to the crux of the matter. Like, we've been promised this mass deportation, and now the business class is wondering, oh, what are we going to do to replace our cheap labor?
Florida Policy Institute's Alexis Soukalos is against the bill.
That's really going to be an unfair choice between school and work when really we should be keeping these guardrails in place so there's the proper balance.
She says 16 other states are also considering rolling back some protections or have already done so as the debate in Florida continues. Manuel Bojorquez, CBS News, Homestead, Florida.
How young were you, Paul, when you had your first job where they took taxes out?
15.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I worked part-time, and I couldn't wait to get into the workplace and try things out. Started off in a hobby store, then in a restaurant, a couple of different restaurants, and then I wound up working part-time in radio in my junior and senior years. And I would have done that for free if they asked me to.
When I was 15,
I was so interested.
I was the baked potato fry and bun man at Ponderosa.
I worked at Mr. Steak. I was what they call the wheel man. And boy, was that hard work.
Baker's down. All right, I'm getting them.
Yep.
This is the Big K Morning Show. And every Tuesday at this time, we check in with another medical professional from Independence Health System Expert Care here. We had our Giant Eagle Feed the Need all day Tuesday. So our guest was kind enough to join us this morning. And Dr. Thomas Pranko is the Medical Director of Interventional Radiology. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
Let's just start by defining what interventional radiology is.
Yeah, so interventional radiology is a specialty where doctors use imaging guidance, which can be fluoroscopy, which is a type of X-ray, similar to heart catheterizations, but also other imaging like CT, ultrasound, and sometimes even MRI to perform minimally invasive procedures that often will help people avoid more involved procedures, major surgery type procedures. So that's pretty much what an interventional radiologist does.
All right. Let's also ask to explain what a pulmonary embolism is and how common are they?
So pulmonary embolism is really just a blood clot in the lungs, and they usually come from what's called a deep vein thrombus or a blood clot in the veins of the legs that break off from the legs and travel to the lungs. They cause their problems because they'll cause difficulties with impairing gas exchange in the lungs and causing the right side of the heart to work more. They're more common than people think, actually. It's estimated there's about one case per 1,000 people per year, or in the United States, between 300,000 and 600,000 cases a year. And they can contribute to about 100,000 deaths per year in the United States. And in fact, Larry, over the last 30 years, hospital admissions for these have increased over 237%. For pulmonary embolism, and part of that is due to better technology with CT scans picking them up. But it is definitely something that we're seeing on the rise over the last three decades.
And doctor, what are the typical symptoms that someone might experience if they're having a pulmonary embolism?
So symptoms can range from no symptoms at all, where it's picked up as an incidental finding on a CT scan, say, performed for something else, to having shortness of breath at rest or with minimal exertion. Some people will describe chest pain. Sometimes that's called pleuritic chest pain, where you feel it when you take a breath in. Fatigue, coughing up blood, something referred to as hemoptysis in the medical world, or even passing out or near passing out. And then, of course, with a massive pulmonary embolism, it can even present as sudden cardiac arrest, ultimately leading to death.
I've always heard, doctor, that if you cough up blood, then that is a sign of and a reason to see your physician, even in your PE, right?
That is correct, yes.
All right. What are the treatment options then when you have discovered a pulmonary embolism?
The treatment options will depend on the patient's clinical status as well as the overall clot burden in the lungs. It can be as straightforward as medical therapy, being put on blood thinners as an outpatient and following with your doctor. If the patient has a more serious clinical condition in terms of symptoms being more serious, large clot burden, they can be admitted to the hospital, started on intravenous blood thinners, And then over the last several years, there have been advances in more invasive procedures that interventional radiologists do. One is catheter-directed thrombolysis, which involves putting a catheter up from a vein at the hip and advancing it up into the right side of the heart, into the arteries that go to the lungs where the clots are, and infusing a very potent medicine to break up the clot. Some patients can also benefit from something called catheter-directed thrombectomy, where you put a larger bore catheter up the same way and actually aspirate the clot out through that catheter.
And what's the shockwave treatment that's part of this for different diseases?
So shockwave lithotripsy, going down a different pathway here, is for peripheral arterial disease. So peripheral arterial disease is basically the restriction of adequate blood flow to the extremities, what we call hardening of the arteries or atherosclerosis. And shockwave lithotripsy is a newer technology that's come out the last couple of years. What it involves is the technology of lithotripsy that's been used for years for kidney stones, but it's applied to the blood vessels. And so an angioplasty balloon, which is inflated to open up a blocked blood vessel, contains a type of technology where there's a vaporization of the fluid in that balloon. What that does is it creates a sonic pressure wave, causing microfractures in the calcium plaque in the blood vessel wall. The overall idea is to improve the flow through that vessel.
A lot of great information, Doctor. We appreciate what you and your team do every day. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Thomas Branco, Medical Director of Interventional Radiology in the Butler area of the Independence Health System, expert care here. Oh, and I look forward to this moment every week with Dr. Mike Hutchinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. Doc, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. I was thinking about you because of this wild weather swing we've had in the month of March, where we had tornadoes, we've had freezing weather, we've had warm weather, looking at 76 for a high Saturday. But we did talk about the fact that it was the coldest winter in a decade, and that will help with the tick population, but still one of our top questions.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. Every day above 32 degrees, those ticks are coming out. Even if there's snow on the ground, they're coming out looking for a blood meal. We find ticks every month of the year on our pets. We find them in the clinic, and that's why it's so important to do year-round tick control.
Well, that leads right into the first question from Emma in Shadyside. Doc, do I really need to treat my indoor cat for fleas and ticks?
You know, that's a very good question, and I like that question because I get that a lot. And so absolutely you should. Remember that these fleas and ticks can hitchhike on us into the house. Now, most of the products that we use are for fleas and ticks. You don't get one just for fleas and one just for ticks. So when I say treat them year-round, I'm considering fleas and ticks that year-round treatment. So by taking care of the ticks that are a year-round problem, you're also ready for the flea season, which isn't as bad in the winter, but it is something that we do recommend treating indoor cats. I treat my indoor cats because I have dogs that go in and out, and we go in and out. So that's how they get. They sense carbon dioxide, hop onto us, we walk in, we're not their host, they jump off, now they're on the cat.
So they literally sense the stuff that we're basically giving off, so to speak.
Yeah, and when we exhale, they can sense that carbon dioxide. And it happens every year. People come in and they have a flea problem with their indoor cats, and they go, Dr. Mike, I don't understand. This cat never goes outside. So that's how they get in. They hitchhike on us, and then it becomes a problem. 10 fleas in a month can lay 200,000 eggs. So you get one or two fleas in, and now you have a problem. You know, within a month or 2 months, you have a serious problem.
Excuse me, I'm scratching. Well, speaking of ticks, now we go from a cat to a dog in Cranberry Township. Carolyn wants to know, Dr. Mike, after finding ticks on our dog, should we treat him preemptively for Lyme disease or wait for symptoms? This is a great question.
Yeah, they're a really good question, because they do that a lot in people, if you find it, because they get that little bullseye, and then a lot of the doctors will give you antibiotics for a few days to prevent the infection. But we don't treat the dogs preemptively. We only treat them if symptoms appear. And the reason that we do that is because 90% of the dogs that get exposed to Lyme disease never get sick. So we don't want to, you know, treat them for something that's not happening. Monitor them for symptoms, fever, limping, lethargy, decreased appetite, those kinds of things. Keep them on tick prevention year-round. And we can do a quick blood test, a 10-minute blood test to check for exposure in animals if you did see engorged ticks. We say that from that tick, it might take 4 to 6 weeks for the Lyme disease to develop. But what if they got bit 4 to 6 weeks earlier? So you can always do a quick tick test to see if your dog has Lyme disease.
From Laura in Gibsonia, dear Dr. Mike, what do you think about glucosamine supplements for older dogs with stiff joints? We've heard about this for people.
Yeah, I love it. Glucosamine chondroitin sulfate. The products in dogs that I like are Dasaquin, U-Move, Y-U-Move, M-O-V-E. I like them a lot. You can have them with MSM. Sometimes they're added with MSM. We don't know if that does a lot of good, but in some dogs it seems to. And always remember omega-3 fatty acids from fish oil. I always talk about those. Will help with the arthritis too. So certainly I love the glucosamine supplements. Even in younger dogs, if they have athletic injuries, sometimes you get a three-year-old dog that tears its cruciate in its knee joint, and those are good dogs to put on prevention for the future because glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate will help lubricate the joints. So it helps keep them from developing more arthritis, hopefully.
I would imagine it's difficult sometimes with certain animals, especially dogs and cats, obviously, to find ticks sometimes.
Oh, ticks are a nightmare to find. I have a long-haired shepherd. Good luck finding those, unless they're on the surface crawling. And they blend in. He's black and tan. They blend in. So I always go over them when they come in. I spray the Listerine and water over them. For the people who don't know, the regular strength or the original Listerine, not the Minty Fresh. Fill up a spray bottle 90% of the way with a Listerine. Fill it up the rest of the way with water. Shake it up. Spray it over your dog's coat before you go for a walk. Spray it on your clothing, and it helps repel them. It doesn't kill them, but it helps repel them. And then you hope the tick prevention that you're using does the rest of the job if they get through that.
And then you may have ticks with fresh breath, but don't be fooled.
Exactly.
Doc, always illuminating. I appreciate it.
A lot of fun. Have a great weekend.
All right. The good Dr. Mike Hutchinson. Go to animalgeneral.net. We have a link at kdkaradio.com.
From the Goldberg, Persky, and White News Desk, it is opening day, and Paul Skeens is starting for the Bucks at Miami. And the question is, can he top last year?
1-2, a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Skeens strikes out Aaron Judge on the slider, and he strikes out Soto and Judge in the first. Paul Skeens, get ready for a Rookie of the Year in Pittsburgh.
The voice of Joe Block, who will join us every Friday, by the way, at 9:35. And yes, Skeens has apparently developed some additional weapons and extra pitches. So we'll see how that goes starting today.
I know what I'm doing at 4 o'clock. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth addressed again that leaked group chat about U.S. airstrikes in Yemen that accidentally included a journalist. And here's what he told reporters in Hawaii.
There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
Some people are differing with the use of this for a high-level conversation about striking militarily another country. So we'll see, and I'm certain they won't do that again.
Visit Pittsburgh's annual meeting was held Wednesday, Larry, and it was hosted by an upbeat Jared Bacher.
When we look at 2026 and beyond, we'll have a new airport, a new international airport that'll be world-class. The downtown area will continue to see development. There will be a lot more opportunities for us to point to the success of the NFL draft.
We really do have a lot going on, and the draft helps really unite the region to try to pull together and make some real progress around not only downtown, but around the 10-county area.
Yeah, and the teamwork that's required for this is going to be
extraordinary.
Probably going to be able to write a book about it. I know this much. Think about all the logistics challenges there are going to be with two different venues like this for the draft, one at Point State Park and the other on the North Shore, and getting people back and forth efficiently.
It's a project, and many of the collective minds of the region are working on. Thanks, Paul. That's what people are talking about. This kind of flew under the radar, but I saw this from President Trump. He's vowing a new approach to getting homeless people off the streets by forcibly moving those living outside into large camps while mandating mental health and addiction treatment, an aggressive departure from the nation's current homelessness policy. And joining us from right here in Pittsburgh on the North Shore is Executive Director of the Light of Life Rescue Mission, Jarrell Gilliam. Welcome back.
Hello, Larry. It's always good to be with you.
So I wanted to get your opinion on this new approach that apparently will start at some point soon, since you've been a part of dealing with our homeless population unhoused for a long time. Your reaction?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that there's attention being brought to it. It's most important that we continue to work at this and admit that the current approaches are not being effective or as effective as they need to be. And so we need to continue to push the envelope, to be innovative, to find ways to help those who are suffering in our streets. It is also, as I listened to what the president had to say, it's much more nuanced, and there's not one answer that can be brought to this. As we've talked about this before, Larry, each person's path to homelessness is unique and requires a unique approach in order to help them to get back into health and back into society. What I do appreciate, though, about the approach is that there are times that we know that there are people that are unable to ask for help. And the way that our current our behavioral health system is set up is for volunteerism. It's for people to be able to say, hey, I need help. And when people are not able to recognize that they need help, there's this big word, anosognosia. It's the inability to know that you need help, then they're left to suffer. And in those cases, there are more aggressive kinds of actions that need to be used in order to get people off the streets and into safety.
And for those severely who have mental illness and deeply disturbed, the question I have is, the president said, quote, we will bring them to mental institutions where they belong with the goal of reintegrating them back into society once they're well enough to manage. That said, where are these mental institutions? We've always heard that we have a lack of mental health care availability in this country.
Yes, we do. And it's been broken ever since the kind of decommissioning of the state hospitals that happened, decades ago now. There is a rule that most people don't know about. It's called the IMD Exclusion Act, which basically limits hospitals to 16 beds for mental health. And that archaic rule right now limits hospitals here in Pittsburgh from having more than 16 people, admitted at one time. And so it ends up creating this revolving door where people, where Medicaid will no longer pay after a certain point. You can't have more than 16. We need to change that, but we also need new facilities. We all agree that the old facilities and the one flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of thing needs to go. But there are new plans. There are new approaches now that are green, that are open, that feel more like campuses, that are trauma-informed. And those kinds of facilities do need to be built. And here in Pittsburgh, we do have housing stock, and we have blighted buildings. We have spaces that if we had the will, we could all come together on both sides of the aisle and make a plan. I don't like in his plan where he talked about tent cities. Again, if a place is not suitable for human habitation, why are we saying that a tent city is a place for people who are suffering to stay? But I do think we should have a plan, and we need funding for that. And if the federal government wants to provide that, that would be great. We do need to have a plan to have different types of housing and supportive housing options for those who are suffering from behavioral health issues.
Executive Director, we appreciate Jarrell Gilliam and the work you do every day. Thank you. I appreciate your willingness to give your response and thoughts. Important.
Thank you. Let's keep the conversation going.
You got it. From the Light of Life Rescue.